Hi, I'm Gordon Lamphere, and welcome to the Real Funds Podcast, where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers who are shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. Today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Callie Yost. She's the CEO and founder of the Flex Strategy Group. Callie has been a thought leader in hybrid and flex work since the late 90s. So we take a deep dive into how companies can drastically improve workspace productivity through intentional redefinition of work models, effective space utilization, and the importance of engaging middle career employees. In Callie's perspective, the future looks bright. Most businesses have a lot of work to go to fully optimize their workforce and workspaces. If you're a CEO, COO, or HR director, today's podcast is well worth a listen.
Callie, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
Oh, Gordon, I am thrilled to be here.
So I wanted to start, what got you into the whole workspace world and the world of productivity and the world of real estate?
So I'm in the world of real estate by way of flexible work models. And I got into that, believe it or not, back in the late 90s. I was a banker. I had a team of bankers who worked for me. I was a junior manager in training, so I did not have any kids myself, but I had this business where we lent to closely held companies. And so the banker customer relationship was really important. And we were in Manhattan, and I was seeing that I was losing bankers to what my little sort of late 20-year-old mind was saying, a lack of flexibility in the way they worked. So it just made sense to me because I had no preconceived notions of how this should go down. So I just suggested to my leadership, like, well, why couldn't they just work from home a couple days a week? Or, you know, and you would have thought I was talking another language there. I don't even know what you're talking about, Callie. Like, I know. So it just got me thinking, and I realized that there was this sort of nascent group of people rethinking work in the late 90s. And I kind of hooked into what they were doing, and I would read about them. And finally, I just decided, you know what, this is the future. And I'm going to go to Columbia Business School to be a work flexibility strategist. So when I tell you I was probably the first person to walk through the halls of Columbia Business School in 1993, saying I'm going to be a work flexibility strategist. But it was there that I actually pulled a lot of these pieces together for the first time. And, you know, they had a wonderful real estate program, and they had a wonderful operations program, and they had a wonderful management of organizations program. So I started to thread the needle around all these different ways of working. So that is how I got into it. And here I am today, all these decades later.
So we've had a lot change over the last decades between the 90s and today. And I'm curious, what do you think the biggest change has been? And, you know, what are you seeing in the workplace right now?
So I think there have been three main changes since the late 90s. Obviously, technology has made a big difference. I mean, it has allowed us to sort of untether. Like I used to say in the sort of before the late 90s, clocks and walls told us when work ended and life began, right? And then after that, with the mobile phones and with laptops, and, you know, we now could kind of work wherever and whenever we wanted to. So that was a big, big change. The second big change, obviously, is demographic. As technology just became kind of, you know, the way we do things, each successive generation has a different expectation about work and like where it needs to happen and when it needs to happen. So you sort of have this interesting meshing of different contexts of what work is. And then finally, obviously, COVID. I never in my wildest imaginations would I have imagined that a pandemic would hit and within literally days, the entire world would transition from, you know, pretty much a sort of place-based traditional work model mindset, which, by the way, was already becoming much more flexible, but that's still kind of how we thought, to one where, okay, we're not going in at all. And I had no idea it would last so long. So that's really where we are. And now we're sort of coming back, right? We're saying like, that was a crisis. That was not thoughtful. That was not intentional. So how do we do this on the other side? And that's what I'm excited about.
So how do we do it intentionally on the other side, right? Because yeah. I know we work with a wide range of clients, and we're doing everything from 5,000 foot deals to 30 or 40,000 foot deals. What we're trying to help clients get their employees back into the workplace. So how do we readdress work in the post-2020 world?
So I like to say it's stepping back, because we kind of have to step back. We're being very reactionary. We're trying to do this by policy. And really, this is about redefining our operating models. And that is a different approach. And so I like to think of it as taking the best of what we learned over these last 5+ years, right? I mean, all things weren't horrible. Okay, there were good things. But then adding back the things that are definitely missing. And what I consistently hear is the things that are missing would be development, collaboration, maybe some innovation, and culture. Okay, those are pretty consistent themes. And so what does that look like in a high-performance, flexible work environment where people are performing at a high level across places, spaces, and time, and defining what those parameters are for your organization, because everybody's going to be different. And the problem is we keep thinking if we just one size fits all mandate, it's going to work. And then people get in there and they're not doing anything different than they did when they were at home. So they're kind of like, this is a waste of my time. So we have to really look at this as more of a work transformation approach. And it includes, for sure, real estate, because real estate is an important enabler of that flexible work model. And I'll say one more thing, and then I want to hear what you have to say. But I think there's a new math here for space. And I think we have to look at space a little differently, the calculation around space, because people have to move through that space in an effective way in order to optimize their work, which might mean there could be more unutilized space, right, for periods of time in that model that still are valid and worth the investment, but we have to think about it a little differently.
So, yeah, I mean, can you expand on kind of that unutilized space model? That's something that we have a tremendous amount of interest in within our own client base. I mean, you go into their offices and you'll see, you know, some of their spaces are crowded as can be and other spaces look like a ghost town. What are you seeing?
So there's two things. One, again, if you look at the work that is being done when people are in those spaces, that's when you, and because you have to start right with defining that model, like what are you going to do when you're in person? What are you going to do when you're not in person? And then you begin to see, okay, this is the type of work we're going to do when we are in this space together. If you organize the space and design the space to support and enable that work, that will help in terms of making sure the space you have is being utilized as best as it can. The second thing is, I'll give you an example. I was on a panel with the person who is the global workspace strategist for LinkedIn. And he told me something that really made sense to me, is they as an organization have found different groups come in between 2 to 3 days a week in the organization. They have essentially removed Fridays from their space utilization calculation. Friday's just like, that's just what we got to do. Now, what they're doing is they are adjusting sort of the support services that are in that space on Fridays, but obviously the space itself, they are still carrying. And I thought, and he explained it to me, he said, we've realized that our flexible work model is such that Fridays are going to be light, but the way people are utilizing our spaces the other days really does allow, provide an ROI that allows us to carry that space.
That's interesting. Yeah. Fridays and Mondays tend to be ghost towns and offices generally. And you'll show up on Wednesday and you'll be like, are we back in 2019? This is crazy.
I know. Right.
So in terms of that, there's a disconnect between days of the work week, but there's also a disconnect between kind of how C-suite employees see work and how everybody else does.
Yes.
So what are you seeing kind of that gap, and how is that playing out your practice?
Oh, sorry. I call that the clash of contexts. Okay. And we have been in this clash of context for literally years now. Okay. So C-suite leaders, they grew up, right? Their context for work continues to be on-site, in-person, you know, doing your work, exchanging ideas. You know, they're not necessarily seeing work, the workspace and place, as an enabler, but not the core, right? But then over here, you have this other group, which is super interesting. Anybody who's entered the workforce in the last 5 to 7 years, they almost don't have a context for what the workplace can support and enable. They're very tech focused and they know how to use technology, but it's almost like you have to reintroduce them to what happens when you're in a space. And so that's the challenge slash opportunity, right? Is to find a C-suite leader who's insightful enough to say, there are things about being in person that matter still, but I'm not going to worry so much about getting bodies in an office and counting days in the office. I am going to worry about how we are optimizing in-person interactions that matter, wherever those happen, right? And then build back from there to say what aspects of that require an office and how do we support that? And there's a great professional services organization that went through this exercise. And what was super interesting is they found out post-pandemic that their clients, so usually they would go to the clients, right, for periods of time during the year. They found out a lot of their clients didn't have adequate workspace anymore for them to go on site. So they ended up having to use their personal sort of the space they had for that client work they used to do offsite. But instead of saying, oh, you're assigned to this office, teams would work through the different offices in different regions, depending upon where their clients were. So again, it's about starting with what are those in-person interactions that matter to achieve those outcomes that we think are important, you know, quality, culture, innovation, collaboration, efficiency, and then figuring out how the space fulfills that, but then bringing everybody together, your C-suite, and these younger people, the part of your workforce that doesn't necessarily understand yet, and define the parameters and then pilot it. What's so fascinating is when you bring these younger people in, they kind of want to be together, but they don't know what that means. And when you bring them in and you show them what's possible, they are so willing to buy in. And what is also fascinating is they start to help maybe some of the other employees who aren't as quite tech savvy and understand what can happen in tech on technology, help them adopt the technology. It's a true win-win. And that's what I hope we see more of. But it takes that C-suite leader to be willing to say, yep, that's my context. It worked for me in a different era. Parts of that still matter. But now how do we create a new reality, that sort of next frontier of how, when, and where we're going to work together?
Have you seen businesses that have done that effectively, that have had the effective move back? Because I know we've seen some great stories within our client base, and we've seen some clients that are still struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, curious to see what you're seeing in your situation too.
Yeah. I think the biggest gap that we've seen in our practice is a lot of clients that are, I would say, struggling to get middle career employees to come in. That it's a ghost town between, you know, you got your C-suite there.
Yeah.
And you've got your first and second, you know, first year, second year, maybe third year employees that are all there. And then everybody in the middle is saying, hey, you know, I don't really need to come in. I've got it all figured out. I'm going to work from home. I'm going to hang out with my dog. I'm going to spend extra time with my kids. And that's stuff we all get. But the big gap that you see then is the first and second and third year employees don't get to learn from those middle career employees who are your institutional and business cultural, you know, capital right there.
Yep.
So I'm curious how you're seeing that play out in your practice.
So in that process I just outlined, those people would play two roles, right? They would be the manager or they would be the subject matter expert, right? And the manager would be the one leading that interaction, right? So they themselves are involved in defining what is prioritized when everybody's in person, how is that going to work? And then what are we doing when we're not in person? And so they're really the fulcrum of that change process. So they just get bought in by being that leader, okay? The subject matter expert person, They're part of that process. And what it does for them is it shows I'm not wasting my time by being here. That's the intolerance is if I'm coming in here and when we're here, I'm basically sitting here doing all the things I did at home. That sort of subject matter expert person really does have a sense of like, this isn't worth my time. So again, it's that change management process or what I call change magic process where you involve people in defining what that looks like and how, when, and where work is done. And you get alignment, and that's really important. So you have, first, you have to assess where you are, right? So you want to know really how people feel about what they're doing and where they're doing it and what's missing. So it's a clarity around what you're trying to solve for, first and foremost. Then you got to align everybody. And that alignment is a process. And then, of course, always important, you want to activate, you want to experiment and iterate, because again, you're going to think you have it, and then you're going to start to do it, and you realize we have to make adjustments. So again, this is just all part of a process. But if you involve people and approach it that way, you'll see a lot more buy-in.
What's the most effective way you've seen companies experiment? We've brought on work strategy experts from WeWork. We brought on the work strategy expert and the head of operations at Hulu. We brought on a bunch of people to the podcast that have done experimentation in the workplace in various ways and to various degrees of success.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious where you see the most effective experimentation in implementing positive work culture change.
So the experimentation has to be within a set group of parameters. I call it, you want to define how, when, and where everybody's going to work in this set of parameters. And when those parameters are set, it gives people the sort of structure within which to experiment. It's when people are like, oh, let's experiment with everybody picking their own day. It's like, that's too kind of random, and it's not anchored to anything related to an outcome that you're trying to achieve and the work you're trying to do. So it does require some initial setup, some initial alignment around kind of where work's going to happen, what's going to happen where, when it's going to happen, and how it's going to happen. So what that looks like is not just only on-site, but also remote. You're going to clarify when you're working. A lot of organizations now are working across time zones, right? So how are you doing time zone fairness? And when are you in asynchronous and synchronously connecting with each other? And then it is around technology. So you want to pull in not only the communication and collaboration tools that people need to use and make sure there's a consistent adoption, but you want to make sure that any kind of AI transformation that's happening is pulled into this process as well. And then you want to make sure people have the competencies to do this well. So make sure the senior leaders understand, okay, this is how you're going to have to approach work if we're going to be effective in this model. Make sure managers know how to lead high-performing work, flexible work teams. We only train 44% of our managers globally. And we're moving toward this whole like delayering thing, which, you know, again, if you got a super great, well-trained manager in this flexible, high-performing environment, great. Make sure they know how to do it. And then we also have to train people. Like, you as an individual have a different level of intentionality required of you about planning what you're going to do when you're in person, planning what you're doing when you're not, like making sure you have adopted all that technology. And then you experiment. So again, it's, you can't just be like, hey, let's, you know, put some, you know, policy in place and experiment. That's not what this is about. It really is that model and then experimenting with that and adapting it as you go along.
So I know you mentioned distributed teams, and that's probably been one of the biggest challenges we've seen working with individuals trying to find offices that work and workspaces that work in general. Where have you seen the success stories with distributed teams and kind of the hybrid model? Because that's something that there's been a lot of mixed results across the board in corporate America.
Okay, this is my opinion. And what I've seen work is we stop saying distributed and hybrid. Okay, it's all part of a flexible work model. They're just working across different places, spaces, and time. Okay, and so the hybrid people are still working with the distributed people. So we have to just say this particular group has a particular ability to be in person with each other on a regular basis. And so let's optimize that. But they also still have to be effective when they're not in person. And so how does that then loop in the distributed team, this distributed people that they have to work with? So it's really setting up this sort of broader model around how and where people are working, using technology, communicating with each other in real time when they're not together in person, and at the same time, adding back in that in-person interaction that matters based upon the configuration of that team, based upon the how much talent and experience that team has, based upon the work that team does. So some may be very sort of co-located office-centric that they're meeting on a periodic basis, but others may be that professional services firm that I explained, where they're just based on the engagement that they're in, they're picking the office that's close to wherever they are, and that's where they're working. And you know, of course, you have the models. I have one global not-for-profit I worked with where they really did just decide, okay, so we're going to pick every quarter, we're all coming to this one location and sort of having home week, right? From across the globe, people would come and be in person for that week. And that's how they decided, even though they had a whole portion of their workforce that could do some of that in-person interaction on a regular basis, that's how they decided to roll in the distributed part of their workforce to be have that in-person time as well.
So I know we've talked a lot about office workers, and we could dive into that even further. But I think one of the unique things that I've seen in some of your content is talking about flexibility in manufacturing and R&D and in more of an industrial context. And I was pretty blown away by that, honestly, because that's not something that we typically see, at least in the Chicago market. So I'm curious, kind of, how does that play out? Can some of our lessons from remote work translate to the manufacturing world? Or is this an office problem with office solutions?
So again, that's why I'm really encouraging us to pull back the lens and start talking about this as a flexible work model, performing at a high level across places, spaces, and time, and really looking at everybody's the particulars of a job, right? So it's interesting. Nick Bloom's one of his most recent research reports came out, and there was like 25% of manufacturing or construction jobs are done remotely. And I'm thinking, see, this is what's happening. We're starting to deconstruct jobs, okay? And we're starting to see what is the part that can be done from a remote location and what requires us to be on site. And whatever little bit that looks like that you could do remotely, that's fine. That's part of the flexibility that you can have in this job. And so that's what I'm seeing, is starting to deconstruct the work, say, do we really have to have three set shifts in this manufacturing facility, or could we rotate the shifts, or could we have, I've seen this, while work teams picking their shifts based upon what it is their personal realities are, having more part-time. I've seen part-time shift work coming in. I've seen, you know, again, thinking creatively about not just where work is happening, but when work is happening and how. And so that really does open a whole world of possibilities for jobs where people historically have had to be on site to do their jobs. You don't have nurses now. They're just like monitoring remote locations where people are, you know, hooked up to different monitors, and they're notifying the nurse on site that something has changed. And, you know, really being, again, creative about what work could look like and how, when, and where it happens. That's where I think we need to go. But when we talk about hybrid, here's the challenge. Hybrid is very where-centric. Okay. So what it does is it says, you know what? Sorry, if you have to be there, there's nothing we can do for you. And that's not right. That's not true. And hybrid also infers two locations. And there are a lot of people who work across multiple locations. So when you're defining the parameters of that model, you have to be able to say, okay, when are you on site in the location, right? Our workspace, but when are you out in the field? When are you working from home? Like, what does that look like? And hybrid just is too limiting for that. So I'm encouraged, because the most recent conference board web podcast for the HR community said exactly what I've been saying for years now, which is we have to move past hybrid. And I was sitting in my car, I'm like, yes. So again, that's where I think we're evolving to, is what is our flexible work model? How do we perform at a high level? working across these different dimensions, and what does that look like for our organization? And then how does Workspace enable that? That's the key piece of this, is like, then what is Workspace? How does it help us be successful?
So how does Workspace and HR enable us, right? Because like no one was trained for this. Mm. I came into the world and I'm a millennial, right? And yeah. a lot of this is relatively foreign to me, and I'm trying to learn and update myself and educate myself on possibilities. So how do we move forward?
So this is where I'm really encouraged. I'm hearing more and more conversations around change management, okay? But I prefer to call it change magic, and I'll tell you why. Because when you engage in this process, I have seen it happen every single time. You unlock so much more engagement, innovation, productivity, well-being. People really, it really is worth it, but it takes time, right? Change, the historical model of change, right? Where you have to assess and then you have to align everybody and then you have to experiment and then you have to iterate, right? Can feel kind of like a lot and can feel like it takes too much time. Like, it's just so much easier if we just put a policy in place and just call it a day and move on. It's like, my message there is, I've been working with clients since COVID and they've moved on. They don't even need me anymore. They're like, thanks so much. We're not talking about this anymore because we're moved on to our high-performing flexible work model and we really appreciate it. How many people are still talking about this? Honestly, like, are you just not ready to move on from RTO? Because you can move on from RTO if you approach this in a deliberate, thoughtful way. And I would say one of the things that we add on to this is AI, is the same process that you have to go through to define your work model, which is you have to look at the work. What makes sense? What is AI? What makes sense AI and human? What makes sense when we're just human? And again, integrating that into the whole. So there is a lot we know about change management. There is so much change management theory. Like, our work is based on change management theory that's been around since the 40s. I mean, this is not new. It's just that we haven't really embraced the power of that because we haven't really had to, right? Like, now we're in a moment where work is so sort of undefined and overwhelming that we really have to start to think about being deliberate about executing that change. And the workspace, and I believe, and actually that's where I got most of my business before COVID, was organizations saying, I don't need all this space. I mean, people were already saying that. And so we would go in, define the model, and then optimize the space. And that's exactly what has to happen today.
So I know we can dive into that even further, but we're going to dive into our final four. It's always okay. A nice way to wrap up the podcast and learn a little bit more about you and learn a little bit about where we see the world of work and the world of real estate going. So the first question, and one of my favorites I always like to ask, is what do you think will have changed the most about work 10 years down the line?
So what I think is going to change the most about work 10 years down the line is I think organizations will have taken the time to define their high-performing, flexible work model. And there will be a clarity around the parameters within which people will operate across places, spaces, and time. I believe technology will be enabling that work, absolutely, but I also believe workspace will matter. I think being in person and interacting with people in whatever form that looks like for that organization is going to be important and is going to matter, but it's going to be very intentional. And I think we're going to have new math around workspace. I just think organizations will understand that you just have to carry more space than maybe you thought you had in order to facilitate that model. But then there's all sorts of different types of workspace, right? I mean, it'll be a combination of many things, right? And I do think we will have gotten clarity around what aspects of our work really have to remain human to be real and true, and what aspects could be augmented by AI, and what aspects can be just AI alone. And that's going to be part of this process as well. And finally, I believe we will have identified what are the competencies that leaders need to lead these organizations. What do they need to do? How do we train our managers to be effective leading teams that are working across these different dimensions? And finally, I think people will have more comfort and know what their skills need to be in order to be successful in this model. So I'm very optimistic about that, because I think obviously we're to a point right now when we know where we are is not working. And so when we get to that point, that's when we open up and say, how could we do things differently?
So one of the things that sometimes people worry about doing differently is, you know, improving their lives. And some of the best questions we've had on the podcast and best interactions have been advice that we would give our younger self from some of our experts that we bring on. So if you have, you know, one little tidbit of advice on what would be your advice to your young self, what would it be?
Trust your vision. I saw this. I saw this in the late 90s, in the late eight, no, early 90s, I guess. I said late. No, it was the early 80s. No, early 90s is when I first saw it. And I just made so much sense to me. And I just kept following that vision. And each step along the way, I found like-minded people and I was led to the next thing. And, you know, again, just if you see it and you believe it, trust yourself and just follow that.
So beyond trusting ourselves, we love to trust knowledge of others. And that's the whole point of the podcast. We come from an industry in real estate that has a lot of progress left to go. There's a lot of our industry that's way behind, I would say sometimes 10 or 20 years behind where other industries are. And one of the ways that individuals, besides listening to this podcast, can do that is they can go out and pick up a book.
Yep.
So I'm curious, what would be your top book recommendation for somebody looking to improve how they work or productivity or their business?
Can I give you two? Is that okay?
Nope, that's okay. Totally fine.
All right, I'm going to give you an oldie but a goodie, and then I'm going to give you a new one. Okay, so the oldie but the goodie is Charles Handy's Age of Unreason, and this came out in the, you know, 90s, and in it he really projected where we are today in many ways. It's where you have the Shamrock organization, where you have a group of core people who are part, you know, on staff, on salary, but then this organization where people around the outside are working in different ways. And I can remember reading that book at Columbia when I was in business school, and it was the first time I saw written down what I saw. And I just think he offers us a lot of insight and wisdom for this time that we can see, oh, wait a minute, you know what? This has been coming for a while. This isn't all that new. It's just been accelerated. And now we have to meet the moment. And how do we do it intentionally? So Age of Unreason, Charles Handy. The new one that I love so, so, so much is Maggie Jackson's Uncertain. There's a lot of uncertainty right now. And I think her book sets up uncertainty as a superpower. Instead of running away from it and wanting, you know, to have the answer, she shows how data and science will tell us that actually to hold that uncertainty is where we unlock our creativity and see the possibilities. So Uncertain by Maggie Jackson, I highly recommend.
So beyond those two books and reaching out and learning from them, one of the ways we love to learn on the podcast is reaching out to other experts in the world of work or the world of real estate. And I'm curious if you have one recommendation for who we should have on the podcast next.
Phil Kirshner. Phil Kirshner, he worked at WeWork, and he was the corporate real estate person for Credit Suisse for a long time. And he's doing a great job talking about change management right now. He's on LinkedIn talking about it. He's doing speeches about it and sort of the process of change. And I think that's something that could be really, really beneficial.
We'd love to reach out to him. But if someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Best way to get in touch is to go to our website, flexstrategygroup.com. Also follow me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn and I have a new Substack, the Now and Next of Work. So I'd love to connect.
Callie, thank you so very much. We really appreciate it. And we hope to have you on in the future.
I would love that, Gordon. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Callie. We appreciate her insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter and help us continue to get quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfear with Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.